From the studios of their respective lounge rooms, a team of pajama-clad TV tragics ready to slice, dice and dissect the best and worst of what's on the box. It's TV Binge Box.
Greetings, TV lovers. I'm Dan Bennett, and welcome to our Primetime Emmys recap special of TV Binge Box. The team is all here. Steve Mulk.
Schitt's Creek.
Choke as a mento.
Hello, hello. What a wonderful week of TV.
Oh, my gosh. And Stephen Brook.
Succession.
Yes. So many Emmy words, so little time. Let's not waste any time. Clap or Slap and Rewind, both coming up a little later, but let's cut straight to the Emmys chase with...
Group Binge.
The 72nd annual Primetime Emmy Awards looked very different to previous years to accommodate the dreaded coronavirus. This year, the ceremony became a virtually virtual event, with hundreds of cameras dispatched all around the world to the nominees so they could beam directly into LA, where host Jimmy Kimmel was ready to drive the evening's proceedings. Acceptance speeches were given from living rooms, hotel rooms, garden parties, with Emmy staff in hazmat suits, that was a bit of fun, delivering statues to some of the winners. The three-hour broadcast was nothing short of a technical feat for the production team. And the winners list, some of which have already been mentioned. Look, so much to unpack yes. here. We have to get through it all, so let's crack into it first. The COVID broadcast itself, was it successful? And what were the highs and lows for you guys?
I'll start first. I'm just going to say, I actually think I may have liked it better. Is that just because I've been missing things? Well, last year's was quite a dud, I got to say. And I just felt like this pandemies, as they were calling it, where hazmat suits with a new black tie. I just can't believe it took a global pandemic to sort of bring the Emmys back. And yeah. I mean, the Academy Awards have been pretty dud of late. I've got to say, when the stories of all those hundreds of cameras kits dispatched to all those different locations to deliver the speeches live when they accepted them, I was worried when I learned about that. I thought, this is going to be a recipe for disaster. But it worked, and it went off, I think, unless I missed a bit, unbelievably without a technical hitch.
It should have gone terribly wrong at some point, but overall it was pretty good. Man.
It was an ambitious setup, yeah.
For all of the moving parts in it, it absolutely should have fallen on its ass many times. Give an Emmy to the director and the producers right now, honestly. Like a phenomenal effort, a technical Emmy. Just incredible what they delivered. Highs for mine included Jennifer Aniston trying to and failing to put out a fire.
But then she did quite well. I thought, gee, she's actually trained.
I read a great interview today with the co-head writer, who's actually Jimmy Kimmel's wife, who said that she was standing on the side of the stage and the security people wanted to run on and help put the fire out.
You heard them say off stage, put it out.
Yeah, and she's like, no, let them do it. Let them do it. It's great TV. They'll sort it out. And then they did. It was,
it was so great. So the fire. The fact that they had people in hazmat suits standing outside people's homes with a statue and then they walked away. That's amazing. I thought another high was Dave Letterman's bit, obviously pre-recorded. Yes. Very sweet. I love the inclusion of frontline workers and people who have been keeping things going. Things that I didn't like or lows, some of the writing needed another pass at least. Look, I was very, very pleased with most of the outcomes, though we will get to nominations and winners and stuff later, and I will absolutely unload them.
Sure. Brookie, Jimmy Kimmel had a pretty tough job on his hands as host. Malk mentioned that some of the jokes maybe fell a little bit flat, but he had a tough gig. How do you think he went?
Badly.
Oh,
wow. Brookie.
Oh, you stuck a knife in my heart, really?
Really?
Yeah, I'm not the greatest fan of him. I thought David Letterman completely showed him up in a very short time. I've never been a huge fan of Jimmy Kimmel. I think he was, he's not, in my mind, a dynamic presence. You're robbed of a lot of things with these Emmys, aren't you? You don't get the red carpet. You don't get the big audience. Yeah. You don't get the big auditorium.
No response.
You don't
to
have
no
an
laughs.
Orchestra. You don't have people laughing. You don't have buzz. So you need to bring a lot of extra energy to the whole thing. And I think that was provided by other people, not necessarily him. I think he really needed to step up and put his pedal to the floor, turn it up to 11, however you want to describe it. And for me, I just don't think he did. So not dynamic enough.
Yeah,
I could go on. I would have given him a, but to you guys,
a solid B plus. I thought he did really well, considering as a comedian he had no audience to work with.
Apart from Jason Bateman at one point.
Where it was intercut with previous Emmy's audience, was a bit of a smudge, and I didn't like it for the same reason I don't like them playing crowd noise at empty football stadium games.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer Aniston's interaction with him worked because they played up the whole limitations of the coronavirus, but there was so much more they could have done with Zoom calls, with the fact that they weren't allowed an audience, weren't allowed an orchestra, and I thought they could have riffed on that a lot more than they actually did. There were some great moments on those Zoom cutaways, particularly when people had won and were totally spontaneous, but it was almost they were captured by accident rather than design, I think.
But I think that was the beauty of it, because when you try and stage those things, it's also fake. Like the Reese Witherspoon Kerry Washington party, that looked like that was staged. You could tell they'd sort of rehearsed their lines. It would just was awful.
Did not want to be at that party.
Yeah, you didn't want to be at that party at all. But for example, the Schitt's Creek party in Canada, that just looked like the best party to be at, right?
I wanted to be there before they won their first Emmy.
And Zendaya's family, when she won and she almost dropped it and they're screaming in the background, like it was a real moment. Like I just loved that you could see into their lounge rooms, you could see their daggy wives or their, you know, when Jeremy Strong, that's his name, isn't he, Succession, and someone gave him a kiss on the side or Mark Ruffalo's partner sitting on the couch. It was cute and you couldn't have staged that.
Abduba, who sort of yelled out to her mum that she to me that happened despite the production.
Yes,
that was
absolutely.
The talent taking it upon themselves to inject genuine excitement or thrills. And I think that the Emmys failed to exploit that or focus on that to the full extent that they could have.
What we missed is the standard Kimmel / Matt Damon shtick that we have had every other time he's popped up. Some big moment, some whatever. For whatever reason, obviously Matt Damon was unavailable, but jeepers, we needed something to happen. And I think, look, that's a writing gig. That's a, all of those things. He did keep the show rolling in, a very unenviable position. Because all he had to talk to was some guy called DJ D Nice. And all he was doing was reading a teleprompter and press play.
Okay, here's what I think his fundamental issue was. Lack of charisma. Jennifer Aniston, charisma. RuPaul, who was on accepting his award for all
amazing.
Of 2 minutes, well, actually it was probably 30 seconds.
That was a beautiful moment.
Massive charisma exploding out onto the screen. Jimmy Kimmel, not so much. Dan, do you agree with me?
Oh, I think you may be being a little bit harsh. I thought he did a good job. I think it's a really tough gig to not have anyone to bounce off. As you said, when he had Jennifer Aniston there and some other people, it was a little bit better. But I think overall, I'm with Joe. I actually enjoyed this broadcast more than I have in a lot of years. And I think it's because the celebs felt more relaxed. Yeah, I think the fact that we were seeing into their living rooms, it kind of made me feel, which just probably sounds weird, like they could cut to me at any time. Like I was part of it too. Like I was in my living room, they were in their living room.
Dan, did you have your speech ready?
I did, Brookie, and I will save it every year.
One day.
It's just an honour to be nominated.
Yeah.
And I love that there was
clearly...
Save it for
the podcast awards, Dan, because they're coming up.
They are indeed.
I loved that. I mean, I missed the red carpet, but I loved that some totally glammed for their lounge rooms and some were sort of in there.
Yeah,
so there was no dress code. And I liked that. It was just like, what happens? These are, real people. Yeah. But for me, the actual best moment was Tyler Perry's speech.
Yeah.
And I actually am not that familiar with his work. But when he told that, I mean, if you could memorize that speech or write it down and how to write a speech in school, I would definitely do that to teach the kids, because that conversation he had about his grandmother's hand-stitched quilt, and I just felt like this had, yes, it had all the politics. It had, some of the actresses wearing T-shirts that bore the face of some of the victims of police brutality. It had a lot of those elements, but I thought it didn't overplay any of that. It had, for me, a perfect mix of fun, humour, political statements, those teary moments, as I just mentioned, and the right people won as well.
Tyler Perry was the American dream personified, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and what a story, right?
And
yeah.
What incredible. A story.
The Emmys as a ceremony and the fact that he won the Governor's Award allowed him to perfectly showcase what he wanted to say, which I thought, you're right, Joe, he did that fantastically. But the rest of them, they're only actors. They're not that important. Why they have to lecture us on their politics?
You didn't like Mark's speech?
No, I've heard it all before. These are some of the most privileged people to walk this earth. If they want to talk about equality, fine. May I suggest, A, they pay their taxes properly. B, they don't defraud the education system by getting their kids into the appropriate colleges by cheating.
I think it was more about encouraging people to vote. But let's not get too political. Let's get on to the winners, as Joe said.
I don't need that lesson from, you know, maximum respect, a bunch of actors.
If you're given the platform, though, Brookie.
Huh?
If you're given the platform, why not take it?
Because
in a year where there's an election and it's the most important thing that they can do.
This isn't TV black box. You can do that on the other one. We're talking the fun stuff here, all right? So Schitt's Creek made Emmy's history with a clean sweep in all of the main comedy categories. Best comedy series, lead and supporting actress, lead and supporting actor, writing, direction. The first time ever, an extraordinary accomplishment to say the least. However, obviously it meant that there were lots of other wonderful comedy series that weren't acknowledged at all this year. Were there any comedy series that particularly stuck out to you guys that you thought should have got a nod somewhere along the line just to say, hey, we thought you were great too?
I thought The Good Place was overlooked.
Yep.
Oh, just in that it, like Schitt's Creek, finished this season.
Yes.
And while the Academy are quite common to do what they did with Schitt's Creek, this is your final season, here's some awards.
Yeah.
It went pretty full on.
Well, it's never happened to get all of them. Yeah.
No, that's right. I thought maybe Ted Danson could have picked it up. It could have picked up best comedy. But Schitt's Creek, totally deserving.
Yeah, absolutely. I was disappointed that Dead to Me didn't get something along the way.
Mm.
I thought maybe Christina Applegate or Linda Cardellini might have picked up best lead actress. But again, you know, Catherine O'Hara is brilliant. So what are you going to do?
Yeah. And she is a pop culture phenomenon. Talking about Schitt's Creek, we should never overlook it's a broadcast TV program, CBC in Canada. So
it's totally publicly funded.
Dominant in a streaming era. I thought that was really significant.
Because it's pitched Netflix everywhere else.
Yeah.
And also that if it was it might not have been given the time it took to actually gain its audience if it was not on a smaller,
network. Yeah.
At the risk of encouraging people to listen to other podcasts, David Tennant does a podcast. Season 2 is out, and there's a conversation with him and Daniel Levy, and is amazing.
That would be
so. It was recorded a while ago. Wow. Yeah.
So before we move on from Schitt's Creek, I do just like that the two leads. It's like a second act for both of them. And I think there's such a beautiful story in that Hollywood can, she was the Home Alone mum. She was Beetlejuice. Mm-hmm. And then she kind of disappeared forever. And he was Apple Pie Dad. And just the idea that you can come back and at any Apple age and Dad. Age is no.
Yeah.
I just think that's a lovely story.
Her speech really illuminated that.
Yes.
In a charming way, not in a lecturing way.
Yeah, it was a beautiful way. Yeah. Yeah.
The love, seeing Daniel get up and applaud his father, because I think that was the first or second award of the night. Was it Catherine and Eugene won actor, actress? And just to see how emotional he was to see his dad win was awesome. And then they won all of the others.
All of them. Brilliant. If you're interested in a bit of a bonus extra, Dan Levy posted a clip today of his sister watching the Emmys and reacting as each of the Schitt's Creek winners came through, 7 of them in total, and it's lots of fun. She was very proud of her daddy and her brother. But Joe, what was your biggest surprise win of the night or happiest win of the night?
Oh, well, you know what? There were two. I thought Zendaya winning as the youngest actress to win in that category, the drama actress category, at 24 and beating...
Extraordinary.
Not Jennifer Aniston so much. She was a favourite, but Sandra Oh, what a field. Olivia Colman, Laura Linney. I thought that was a surprise, but their faces all told it. They were thrilled for her, I felt.
Yeah. I thought she gave a great speech as well, calling, young people to arms to do their thing.
She did, she did. But the biggest surprise for me was Kendall finally beating Logan at his own game. I was, talk about, you know, a sucker punch, beating his on-screen father,
Man,
Brian
but have
Cox.
A look, in that drama category, I think for Best Supporting Actor, three of them were nominated.
Yeah. And
three
they all got,
of them.
And none of them got them in the supporting actor, did they? Because, oh, quite rightly so, Billy Crudup got it for The Morning Show.
And he was wonderful.
Apple's first Emmy, thanks very much, too.
Oh, of course. Yeah, Brookie, did you have a biggest surprise?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
We'll move on, because the question I have a big answer to this one, which is who should have got a gong but didn't. Does anyone have an answer to this?
Can we or I just... If I could extemporize and crap on, but I didn't have anything.
No, it's
useful.
Fabulous. It's fabulous listening.
I thought Justin Bateman.
Jason Bateman.
Jason Bateman. Justin Bateman. Mixing up. Yeah.
Justin's his male half sister.
Justin. Yeah. Yes. Exactly. The one that actually ages. No, Jason Bateman. I know he was I didn't love Ozark, but I know he was a big fan favorite.
I was really disappointed that Sarah Snook didn't take home the supporting actress Emmy for Succession. Cool. I thought she's a really underrated player, and what it made me realize actually with all the nominees for lead actor and supporting actor with a lot of these shows is that Succession, even though it's a huge television show, doesn't have a lead actress. Which is a problem.
It's all dope.
I mean, she's the female lead.
It is a problem. And you've hit the nail on the head why I didn't like that. I'm not a huge fan of Sarah Snook, I've got to say. I find her very cold. To me, she's, and I know that's the character, but I was thinking about this yesterday and how there are no females to gravitate towards in that series. The mother's as cold as, so I think that's where,
but
and I know some
the
of the.
That's the point.
But it should be her.
But to love a show, you need to have some characters that, and that's why it takes so long to warm up to it. Look, you're a bloke, Malk.
I'm the worst, right?
You know, men in power suits, you know, trying to put their who's bigger, whatever, is not something that appeals to everyone.
I do now have an answer for you, Daniel.
Oh, yes, Stephen.
It's just not to the question that you asked me.
Oh, well, no. This isn't a free-for-all.
No, but two things leapt out at me that I had not been on my radar, but having viewed that ceremony, they certainly now are on my radar in a big way. Mm. The first one of which is the actress Issa Rae in that TV show Insecure. Yep. Which I know nothing about beyond what I've seen on the nomination clips. And I thought, wow, I now need to check that out because I thought she was incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
And what about Watchmen? Because I feel like we haven't even talked about that. And I've. Well, that's has anyone actually watched that?
Yes, what are you talking about? Mark loves it.
Oh, is that the one you've been raving about?
Oh, my God.
I did actually, a highlight for me,
and again, it was a charisma thing. Was the young actor Yahya Abdul-Mateen II winning, I think it was limited series, acting Emmy.
Lead actor, yeah.
And being so thrilled and so astonished and thanking his mum and dad. I thought that was a lovely moment because it was genuine and he was humble. Compare and contrast Billy Porter, who sat in his living room with his Emmy on his coffee table, just to show that whatever happened, he already had one.
Already got one. For me, I thought that, look, and I'm going to combine the two, Dan. Happiest surprise win, really, was all three of the big winners. I mean, Schitt's Creek all the way, and Succession and Watchmen, who I think both picked up 4 from 7 in their respective categories. Incredible. And personally feel a little validated that Succession is the thing. Watchmen is the thing. Hey, Academy, where's my opportunity for membership? but the other thing, the who should have got a gong, but didn't. And this for mine is the omission of the year. Rhea Seehorn's performance in this recent series of Better Call Saul wasn't just to win an Emmy. It should have won all the Emmys. She was incredible as Kim Wexler, and there's a scene that it's been played out a number of times where she is staring down this Mexican gangster who basically wants to kill Jimmy, her boyfriend, the guy who becomes Saul, and she ostensibly talks him out of it. Now, it's incredible writing, but the tension in that scene, you learn halfway through the scene that there's a guy with a sniper rifle outside ready to take the Mexican gangster guy out. It is just like wall-to-wall thickness of amazement. She absolutely owned it, and that she couldn't get nominated is a crime.
Incredible. Well, I'm still yet to get to that series, shamedly, but when I do, I look forward to seeing that performance.
Oh, we will have a week-to-week podcast.
What about you, Dan? We didn't ask you. Was there something missing for you?
Snubbed? Sarah Snook, as I said, I really would have liked her to win. I thought Jennifer Aniston was going to get lead actress in a drama, but I'm not disappointed that Zendaya did, because that series is extraordinary and she carries the whole thing.
Yes.
And she wears a Bulgari-jeweled boob tube sensationally.
Yeah, she did. Very good. And the other quick shout-out, Mark Ruffalo winning Best Lead Actor in a Limited Series. He was so extraordinary, so I'm glad he won. And also the Friends reunion moment with Jennifer, Courtney, and Lisa was lovely.
That was a great moment.
That was so cute.
That was beautiful.
The idea that they've been living together since 1994, just like,
I was reading today, they've been in a COVID bubble together. They've been part of each other's little bubble.
So
they've been
hanging out.
So it's all very lovely.
That is cute.
Yeah. I could talk about the Emmys all day, but we do have the rest of the podcast to get on with. So let us know on our TV Binge Box Podcast Gang Facebook page or at TV_BingeBox on Twitter what you thought of the Emmys. We'd love to hear from you. Now to next week. Malk, you're back in the driver's seat. What will you have us all watching?
I've got some homework for you, friends. Noni Hazelhurst returns in the best form of reality television. It's an SBS series called Every Family Has a Secret. It's the second season. It airs Tuesday nights on SBS at 8:30. Obviously available on SBS On Demand, so you can catch that first episode, which is the one that we'll watch ahead of our conversation next week. The basic premise is that Noni, as the host, and obviously with producers, engages with members of a family or a person and basically talks through or helps them discover some kind of deeply held or surprise or moment that they need to reveal to their family. And they've kind of kept the episodes a bit themed this time.
So they're normal people, not
normal human beings. It's not Ancestry.com, you know, whatever. Wow. This isn't like...
they're not celebrities.
Yeah.
They are not celebrities.
They're not going to tell us we need to enroll to vote.
Correct. They do have either themselves or have to have revealed to them a significant secret.
Wow, so there's going to be children and all sorts of...
Season one included all sorts of weird things like, that's not your dad. It's not Jerry Springer. It's done super tastefully and really, like, it kind of embraces the people at the center of it. Delightful, loving, lovely... A little bit confronting, but absolutely excellent television. Let's check it out. Every Family Has a Secret on SBS Tuesdays and, of course, on SBS On Demand.
Thank you very much, Malk. Yeah, looking forward to that one. I am also looking forward to hearing what Stephen Brook has for us in...
Rewind.
Rookie, what have you been revisiting this week?
Okay, Bingies, we are going back once again to the 80s.
Oh, the best.
This time to 1983. And look, Joe, it is...
Is Lucy Liu in shoulder
have
pads?
Conniptions, because you can get this on a streamer, but this is my particular TV journey, and I was given this as a boxed set.
Oh,
a birthday present. I have to pay tribute to my brother Nick, who I grew up watching a lot of television with, Doctor Who, Blake 7, Countdown, French and Saunders, Magnum PI, which is just off The Muppet Show off the top of my head. He gave this to me a few years ago as a birthday present. And he lives in Britain. And then quite...
So the entire Brook clan rely on DVDs. Is this right? Is this what you send each other for Christmas?
Yes, it is. Thank you, Joe.
Got it.
Anyway, and then I got the update, have you watched this? And I hadn't watched it, and I put it to one side, and I, very persistently, he kept saying, have you watched it, have you watched it, have you watched it, until I finally did, and I'm so glad I did. I think this is actually the first German TV series we have had, And without further ado, I'm just going to play you the theme tune, which I think is such an important part of this show and completely mesmerized me. Here we go.
No idea.
No.
You're on your own.
What is it, Brookie?
Spill.
Unless okay, so it is Deutschland 83.
Oh,
and when I said that we were going back to the 80s, we are, but I cheated a bit because this film, series was actually filmed in 2015. Mm. Used to be on SBS. You can find it now on Stan. So Jonas Ney plays Martin Rausch, who's an East German soldier. He's 24 years old, and he is sent by his government to impersonate a West German soldier in the 80s in Germany and act as a spy. He's great in this role. He appears a bit one-dimensional. He's an everyman thrust into an incredibly tense thriller situation. The real standout of this program, though, is his aunt, Lenora Rausch, who's played by an actress called Maria Schrader. She is this cool, bewitching presence in new romantic 80s fashion who, whilst being his aunt, is actually Martin's Stasi handler. So she's putting him into these dangerous situations, trying to get secrets out of the West German government. There's lots of 80s nostalgia, but also the big themes, nuclear annihilation, idealism, communism, peace, terrorism. But it's also a very human story. I was captivated by this when I watched it. It's a German-US co-production. You can find it on Stan. Mm. And until I looked back on it this week, lo and behold, I didn't realize there's actually two sequels, Deutschland 86, which Nick tells me is set in Africa, not as good. And this Friday, the 25th of September, guess what? Deutschland 89 launches in Germany. So,
amazing.
So you'll be getting sent the DVDs in, what, 5 years' time? Perfect.
Well, there better be some Luftballons involved,
I
that's for sure.
I urge you, it's a bit of homework this week, if some all of you out there on this podcast could at least give the first episode a look and tell me what you think. I'm looking at you three.
Your rewind is not your opportunity to spruik a series, Brookie.
No, it How totally
about,
is.
You know what?
It totally
How
is.
How about you see if your rewind, like my rewind last week, which the three of you did not know, whether it engages so many people to come out of the
like
woodwork
this.
That were fans. Wow. Let's just see wow. that. Let's have a bit of a challenge.
Because we were in the minority. Our listeners knew the show.
They did.
You got mobbed on Facebook, didn't you, Joe? Yeah.
Yes, lots we got of... inundated with comments. It was the biggest
and to give you
engagement.
Props, Joe. I just got berated by my wife prior to this podcast.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely tearing into me that I didn't know what the Young Writers was.
Thank you. Thank you. It was obviously a thing for a certain, you know, a woman of a certain age.
Yeah,
certain,
that's right.
And a person of a certain gender as well, I think.
Yes.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Brookie. Another great one. Lots more TV Binge Box still to come right after this.
Ben, Rob and Robbo.
Media executive Rob McKnight.
Something brand new is coming to your social media feed.
Big Brother winner Ben Norris.
This is something bold and informative with a side of humour.
And journalist David Robbo Robinson.
It's truly going to be something different.
The Ben, Rob and Robbo Show starts April 20. Go to tvblackbox.com.au/BRR for more information.
It's the Ben, Rob and Robbo, Ben, Rob and Robbo, Ben, Rob and Robbo Show.
Yes, the Ben, Rob and Robbo Show is beaming into your TV Blackbox social feeds and over at Ticker TV every Monday through Thursday from 1 p.m. Check it out or not this week because they're having Pete Evans on and... I think they shouldn't, but that's a whole other story, but I just needed to say that. Okay, moving on. It's time to find out what our team have been checking out this week in...
Clap or Slap.
Brookie, you're up first this week. What's been on your watch list?
Come on, well, Brookie.
Again, Halifax on Nine. I say this every week.
You stuck with it.
I know, but I feel proud because it's one of the few Aussie dramas that I am now committed to seeing. And once again, it mixes up
and worth committing to, Brookie.
Slightly hackneyed and mundane with something extraordinary. This week, it was a foot chase through the streets, back streets, laneways, car parks, restaurants of Melbourne that I thought was actually stunning.
Yeah. I'm with you, Brookie. This makes me super excited just for the future of the commercial TV drama industry.
Exactly.
It's been a long time since I felt hope. It's really good. It's good to have it.
I recall you saying that, and I think that you are exactly right, 100% correct.
There's another great setup moment coming to you. You will dig it hard.
Once again, I went to the cinema and I saw a French film. People who know me know that I love Sherlock Holmes. I love Agatha Christie. Yeah. I love a whodunit. So I went and saw a film called The Translators. Extremely high concept. A thriller writer has the third in his trilogy about to be released globally. He has decided that he wants it simultaneously translated so that so that the publisher can have a global blockbuster on his hands. So a group of translators, there's a Russian in there, there's a Greek person in there, there is an English person in there, all gather in a country house in France under the strictest security. Mobile phones are banned. They're put into a high-tech underground bunker to translate this book. And guess what?
Someone does.
He starts getting emails saying, pay me millions of euros, otherwise I shall put the first 20 pages of your novel up online and ruin everything.
Oh, wow. Like
so I'm sure it'll be coming to a streamer. I actually predict, if we're in the mood for predictions given the Emmys, this will get remade as a Hollywood movie in a couple of years, because three quarters of the way through, I was so proud of myself. After the major plot twist, I discovered the gaping plot hole. And then 5 minutes later, there was another huge plot twist and everything fell into place. So props to the translators, because I thought they did a superb job.
Brookie, I just want to hijack you before you go. Being a Sherlock Holmes fan, I nearly picked the Netflix film, Enola Holmes, which lands tomorrow, in fact.
Yes, on my radar.
Starring Millie Bobby Brown as the unknown baby sister of Sherlock and...
Mycroft.
Mycroft Holmes.
Yeah.
And they go missing and she has to find them.
Yeah.
Oh.
It sounds cute. She is tremendous.
Yes.
So I have high hopes for this one because even though I'm a traditionalist... There have been some weird and way out riffs on the Sherlock Holmes story. And a lot of the craziest ones have actually been really successful.
Did you like the Cumberbatch versions?
I did, yes. And it's interesting because I interviewed Stephen Moffat and it was really fascinating how they wondered about how to treat London as a modern metropolis in the whole creation of it. And they thought we are going to make a hero of modern day London, just as the original Sherlock Holmes had made a hero of Victorian and Edwardian London. Yes.
Have you lived in Baker Street, London?
Oh, I haven't, but I went to the Sherlock Holmes Baker Street Museum.
Oh, yes.
Well, I did briefly.
Did you, Jo?
Yes.
What?
So there you are.
Okay.
I'll have to send you my photo with the moustache.
And I'll tell you what.
Moving along.
221 B, 221B Baker Street, fake address, never existed. He made it up.
It's true. Boo.
Yeah. The Social Dilemma on Netflix, which is a hot documentary about the evils of social media, mainly concentrating on Facebook, a lot of very serious-looking techie types. I thought it was very compelling. It's very one-sided. I thought one of the most powerful bits was they saved for the end credits, which they burned and wasted, which was all these former executives saying, there is no way I'm going to let my children on social media. I thought it was fascinating. It has encouraged me to lessen my social media use, but possibly a bit overdone. Jo, what did you think?
Yeah, I have to say, I couldn't get all the way through it. I look, maybe I'm more aware than most, but I certainly, there was nothing on there really, apart from the location setting. That that I had not realised that if I was near you and in the same room as you, your messages would, or your feed would become more prominent in my feed. That kind of spooked me. But there wasn't a lot in there that I didn't really already know, and I found the dramatisation a little bit annoying, like that family.
Oh, when that family went and suddenly got themselves arrested. And
I mean, that mum needed to just, so I was, but maybe I'm more aware than most, so if that is the case, I do agree it's an important one to know. But also, as you said, it was very one-eyed. I think there are a lot of positives to social media as well, but, you know.
Okay, moving on quickly, my clap or slap, I fell upon totally by accident. I had a bit of a technical issue, which meant that for one night, due to various plugs not being plugged in, all I could do was watch.
The DVD didn't work.
Yes, what happened? Joe, wow. You can shame me all you like. I will never blush. Anyway, free-to-air television on a Saturday night, and I happened upon a program that I had not heard about before, and it was terrific. Ambulance on Channel 10.
Where have you been, Brookie?
This is an observational documentary. I found it compelling. I thought it was the real Australia. There was high drama. There were quiet moments of humour. I thought it told multiple stories very effectively like the best reality television, told us something meaningful about ourselves. I cannot recommend it more highly. Please go and watch Ambulance. It's been lost in the chatter, but it gets an enormous clap from me.
Yeah. Great one, Brookie. That's a fantastic show. And the UK version is also available on 10 Play, and it's also brilliant. Excellent. Thanks, Brookie. Joe, what have you been watching?
Okay, so I've only watched two episodes of this, so I'm going to reserve my verdict on the whole till the whole series is done. But I watched Ratched, which is, of course, the drama telling the origin of the asylum nurse Mildred Ratched from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's
Ryan
Nest.
Ryan Murphy special.
It is. Ratched is played by Sarah Paulson. And, you know, she's one of the most valued villains, I guess, in Hollywood history, isn't she? So far, it's entirely beautiful on one level, which is odd considering we're talking about a mental asylum where really hideous things are happening. And that's probably where my problem lies with Ryan Murphy. She looks beautiful. Her costume is beautiful. The sets are beautiful. It's a bit like Hollywood, but, you know, as my daughter Matisse sort of said, geez, really gone ham on the colour grading, hasn't he? Like it's a bit
well
like a
picked.
Set from Wicked or something. Yeah, it's okay. Like the greens really stand out and the blues. A bit like Little Birds. So I'm hoping it goes down the psycho path because that's why you come to that. So far it doesn't have that grittiness or craziness for me, but judgment reserved. I looked into Away because on the advice of one of our bingies, Donna Gabay, who I love, and which is the one starring Hilary Swank. It's on Netflix.
Yes.
By the way, Ratched's on Netflix too. Yep. And that's where she is the first woman and on the first mission to Mars, which obviously is fictional. Look, there wasn't anything wrong with it, but it wasn't enough to compel me. The idea that she's leaving her family behind for 3 years just rubs me the wrong way as a mum. I know that sounds, and opinions may be divided, but I feel like if you have a family, you don't go, I don't know.
You mean after this year, Joe,
choice.
You wouldn't want to up and leave them for 3 years? See
for 3 years. Yeah, good point. Good point. Homeschooling from space, that takes on a whole new meaning, doesn't it? It's kind of a soapy melodrama in disguise, I think, with rockets and space stuff thrown in. But, you know, if that's your cup of tea, go for it. I then stumbled across one which I think is you're going to love, Dan. I'll be really quick with this. Arthur Miller, writer. It's on Binge and it's directed by his daughter, Rebecca.
Yeah.
And what a beautiful piece of television. I didn't know what I was getting into. I've always loved Marilyn. And, of course, I was intrigued by the idea of him telling about their marriage and The Crucible is one of my favourite plays as well. It's a really revealing portrait. It's told. It's like pieced together 20 years of home videos and little interviews she did to camera and she let it sit for ages. And it's just really lovely and an amazing father-daughter thing, but also just a history of, and you know, he was part of the whole 50s McCarthyism and all of that stuff, a really warm portrait of a man who's left a big, and I think as a writer, you will really admire just learning how he wrote. He had this routine. He'd made this hut that he'd ride in every day till he died at, you know, at 90 or something. He'd still get up at 8 o'clock and sit down and write till midday, come and eat. You know, very structured. It was really interesting.
Right. Dan, you're frowning. Thank you. Are you running every day, Dan? You just frown.
No, well, I was literally, as Joe was just talking about a routine, I'm like, okay, so I need a routine.
I can see that in your face.
Today I just like did, that's a whole
moving
story.
On,
anyway,
moving on. Out of time.
Me too, that's why my teeth are white today. I've had a spray tan and look at my face. Anyway, I also did On the Basis of Sex, being the week that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died at the age of 87. That's worth a look. It's not amazing film, but it's certainly historically accurate. Take a look at that if you want to know the
story. The docos are much better, isn't it? The doco of her life, yeah.
This is very much her young life to the point where she does that first groundbreaking case. But my clap for the week, I'm actually going to give to 60 Minutes.
Ooh.
And I thought I should do this because I often call them out when I feel like the promos don't deliver. But I caught the most perfect episode. Did anyone else watch it?
I did not. What was
it was
about?
On Sunday night. Particularly given it's COVID and they can't travel and do all those, you know, globetrotting things that they often do. It started, it was just a really well-rounded episode. It started with the big reveal from Melania Trump's best friend, or God, I always love these best friends that do the tell-all books.
Yeah, you some think, best
friends. With friends like that, who needs enemies? But that was interesting. And then it had a really great piece on the long-term effects of COVID and how St. Vincent's Hospital here in Sydney is at the forefront of a trial of the long-term effects. And I hadn't even really... we read and listen about COVID every day, but I really hadn't realised the worldwide movement now. And Alyssa Milano was someone they interviewed who 6 months on, the suffering they're still going through and the long-term effects. So that was really interesting. And then they had a beautiful chat with, you know, Keith Urban and Pete Overton. It was like my friends in the house and... I couldn't have been more perfect. So I have to say, big clap to 60 Minutes.
Oh, good. Yeah, nice to see that they got the tick of approval. Excellent. Mm. Thank you very much, Joe. Malk, what have you got for us?
Look, I have been reasonably otherwise distracted. So not heaps in my list, but let's, you know, lean into this. I did finish Love Fraud. I will save that conversation because I know you're going to talk about it, Dan. I have continued with Halifax. As I said, I've pushed into that. I've pushed into The Block. I've pushed into kind of really all of the things that I have still been watching. It is to my great shame I haven't really finished The Good Fight yet, but that's just a time issue.
Can I ask a quickie on The Block? Because I caught it the other night and it was just the start of COVID.
Yeah.
Have they finished by the time the second Melbourne lockdown comes?
Yes.
Yes.
Right. So that doesn't affect them. Okay. Sorry.
No, they worked through that and now it's, they're we're waiting until they basically do online auctions. It's going to be very weird. Spoilers. The HBO Max series Raised by Wolves finished and you guys will get to that shortly. I'm in.
Loved.
Season 2 has already been called. Cannot wait. It is. It really pushed some pretty great buttons for me. I really dug it. My clap slash slap for this week is the documentary series The Vow on Fox Showcase and Binge, of course, that is a nine-hour long documentary series on the, the NXIVM, I think that's how you say it?
NXIVM.
NXIVM, thank you. The NXIVM cult that was revealed to have taken in a whole bunch of people, and we see some of them travel through this, including Catherine Oxenberg and her daughter, though Catherine Oxenberg did get out, kind of in time, if you want to call it that, but her daughter did not. Look, it's not really spoilers, but I won't go deep into it because it's a pretty harried, it's a pretty hardcore kind of conversation around what is goes on and those sorts of things. I felt it was probably about 4 hours too long. It's great. There's
4 hours
content.
Out of what? How many hours?
Nine.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So it's interesting
Cassie
you
Freeman
say that.
Was 1 hour.
Yeah.
Because I caught the first episode and I had seen something on it before on SBS, but this is far better, the first episode I caught. But then I had this feeling I haven't had for such a long time, which was, I don't know if my binge was playing up, but I couldn't get to the second episode.
Yeah.
Is it on? Is it not?
No, it's week by week.
It's week to week.
Oh, right. So that old-fashioned feeling of, oh, my God.
Yeah.
What? You mean I can't find it? I'm Googling. Where can I find this?
I mean, good work. I'm showing off a little bit because I've seen the first eight.
So I was in, but as I said, only one episode in. Oh, fascinating.
I did it in a big block. So to stretch it out week to week might actually make it a little more palatable.
Yeah, I'm in anticipation. Because
I just felt overwhelmed by the horrific nature of what ostensibly is that other one that starts with an S, but isn't that one. It's crazy. Have any of you guys seen, other than Joe, obviously, any of you guys seen bits of it?
I watched the first episode and I loved it, but I had a moment of like being out of my body because I was watching it and I saw a friend of mine, quite a close friend, in one of the clips, listening
Not the main
in
girl.
And giving a big hug to Cray Cray ESP lady.
Oh,
and so I'm texting, she lives in London, so I'm texting my our mutual friend here at home going, what is going on? I've just seen this. And my friend's like, yeah, there's a story with that. She's coming over for lunch tomorrow to tell me all about it. So my mind is boggled. But yeah, I thought it was really captivating. I'm so there for the next episode.
Yeah, because the main girl in it is from Melbourne.
She's Aussie, yeah.
Isn't she? Yeah,
she started in The Phantom Menace.
She was on her way to big things. And that's what's, I think, intriguing, you know, apart from the scientific parts of the mind. I found that even interesting, how they cure, you know, there's a whole lot of things.
It's an amazing look at manipulation of people who are in deep, deep need of love, support, care and affirmation and willing to throw their lot in with someone that, you know, to them makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It absolutely gobsmacked me that fully grown adults buy the shit that
smart ones, that successful
shovels,
ones.
Keith Raniere shovels. Yep. It's outrageous. I'm really looking forward to two things. One, the final episode when I'm allowed to see it, and two, again, it's kind of spoilers, but not really, the sentencing of the guy at the center of the car.
Yeah.
Which is 22nd of October, if I recall correctly. Right. Big clap from me. Like I said, I thought it went long, but I did it in a massive, massive bash.
Yeah.
Well, if you have to do it like the rest of us.
Absolutely want to engage with any of the bingies that want to talk about it as you watch the eps, because I'm so intrigued to know, I mean, if you were approached by any of the people, because I'm sure it wasn't just an American thing, how you feel about it, how it's portrayed. I have heard some people say that some of the people in it look like they're just there because they want to, like they had a horrible time. But they seem pretty happy with the PR that's coming out after it. I mean, I don't want to judge into that, but wow.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. Thank you, Mog. To be continued on that one, I think.
Yes.
For me this week, like you, Mog, I was, only got to a couple of shows this week. A couple of new dramas dropped. The first, Dez on Stan. Mm. This is a three-part British miniseries based on the 1983 arrest of Scottish serial killer Dennis Nilsen, Dez for short, played by the extraordinary David Tennant. Dez's arrest came after human remains were found to be causing the blockage of a drain near his home. Daniel Mays also stars as the cop trying to bring Dez down. The story of Dennis Nilsen is a really fascinating one, and there are a bunch of great true crime docos floating around that explore the subject matter really well. For mine, the drama adaptation lacked something. The performances were exceptional, no taking away from that, and the direction and cinematography were great too. I think the problem for me was that the story necessarily only begins after Dez's arrest, so there's very little jeopardy to sustain three full hours of television. Mm-hmm. As a character study, it's interesting, and that's certainly the biggest takeaway here. Dez is a sociopath and psychopath on every level, and they nailed that.
Yes.
But as a three-part drama, it left me wanting. So it's worth a watch, but you're not missing anything urgent if it's not at the very top of your watch list.
That's Dez on Stan. I watch Doctor Who David Tennant play a serial killer.
Well, he's so he embodies this role so well that you will forget he was ever Doctor Who, I promise.
You also clearly haven't watched Harry Potter or
I clearly have watched it, Mog, but I was able to block that out.
Or you haven't watched the other show that I'm about to talk about. He was in season one of this, which is the second drama, also out of Britain, the UK series Criminal UK. So this is a Netflix series set within the confines of a police interrogation room where London investigators engage in intense games of psychological cat and mouse with their suspects to find the answers that they need to solve their cases. Each episode is a different story, just four episodes this time around. And they're basically like mini plays. They really are all just set in this claustrophobic interview room space.
Amazing.
And I should have acted. Yeah, it's an actor's dream, wow, because there are no bells and whistles. It's just pure performance. And there are some stunning performances here. Series regulars include Catherine Kelly, Lee Ingleby, and Roshenda Sundal. And they all do a wonderful job. But the real stars here are the guest leads who appear in their singular episode. David Tennant was in season one. This time around, Kit Harington, Sophia Kendo, Sharon Horgan, and Kunal Nayar each have a turn in the spotlight, and they are exceptional, worth watching for them alone. Unfortunately, I didn't find the scripting as strong this time around. A lot of coincidence and convenience was relied on to get the story told. It was always going to be difficult given the limitations of the format, but I just didn't find myself as engaged this time with the narrative. But as I said, worth watching for the acting alone. It's a masterclass in that. Yeah. That's Criminal UK on Netflix.
Great.
And rounding things off this week, now that the fourth and final episode has dropped on Stan, I'm keen finally to chat in more detail about the docuseries Love Fraud. So Malks told us he's been watching along. Joe and Brookie, have you dipped into this one yet?
Not at all.
I need to.
Should I?
Okay, you've got to get onto it. So this is about the search for Richard Scott Smith, who used the internet to prey on unsuspecting women in search of love, conning them out of their money and dignity. He often had many women on the go at once, sometimes married to more than one of them at the same time. And the documentary finds a whole bunch of these women coming together as a team to try to track him down and get some justice. He's a fugitive wanted for his crimes against
them. Might
be a bit
close to home for me. I got conned out of money one time. Anyway, that's another story. Anyway, sorry, I digress. Yes.
But yeah, they are determined to find him and make him face the wrath of the law. Across the four episodes, we follow their quest in real time all across America as they chase leads and try to track him down through one of his many aliases. Along the way, they employ the help of Carla Campbell, a 60-year-old chain-smoking bounty hunter.
Yes, really. Yes.
Who makes it her mission to help find this guy. Talk about a character. She's just amazing. Sad side note, though, I just read today that she's now retired from bounty hunting after receiving a stage 4 lung cancer diagnosis shortly after completing filming of this series.
Who would have thought?
That's awful.
Does she smoke chain smoke the whole way through?
Yeah. You only saw her with a cigarette in her hand or mouth.
Right.
Yeah. But she's a woman not to be messed with in the docuseries, and there's a huge sense of relief when Carla and the women finally get their man in the last episode. Just how they do that, you have to see, though.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, and then we get to hear from the man himself, Robert Scott Smith. I talked a few minutes ago about Des being a great character study. Well, this guy is as well. Smith is just next level beyond painting himself as the victim. After all he's done, you just have to watch it to see what I'm talking about. My jaw was on the floor. I could not believe his gall. I found this whole thing such a fascinating watch. There were some complaints from some, including Malk, about the use of animation in places instead of overlay during some of the interviews. It didn't bother me too much, and it became less and less as the show went on.
Thank God.
For mine, I loved this one, and at just four episodes, it's not dragged out. It rockets along. Perfect weekend binge viewing. So check it out. Love Fraud on Stan gets a big clap from me.
My favourite moment, Dan, and everyone, and it's not really...
So you loved too?
Oh, look, I'm in. It was great. Yeah, right. Cut the animation out, better, but it was great. In this interview they have with Richard Scott Smith, you hear one of the doco makers, producers off screen ask him, how many times have you been married? Simple question, right? Mm. And he comes up, has a quick pause, three. They ask him to list them. He lists them out with a little bit of trouble. And then they go on to count through with him. It's actually 10.
And he's like, fucking
amazing.
Okay.
It's
dirty
amazing.
John.
Right.
You got to
Dirty Richard, dirty
narcissist
dick.
Narcissist of the highest order.
Okay.
Absolutely insane. And there is a sting in this tale you will not want to miss right after the end of it.
Yeah.
Maybe he will be the next Dirty John.
He may just well
Freddie
be.
Broderick.
He may well be.
Yeah. So check that one out, gang. That's what we've been watching this past week. How about you? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. We're at @TV_BingeBox on Twitter or TV BingeBox Podcast Gang on Facebook. While we're chatting Facebook, Joe, very quickly, what's been happening on our page this week?
Well, Adrian Messenger started out the week binging on 12 seasons of All Saints. I thought that deserved a mention.
Go, Adrian.
Wowzers. A post by Darlene Buckley sent Dan into a spin with new picks from The Line of Duty season 6, stunt scenes, just a tease. Sandra Sears points out the rise of the Murdoch dynasty is fabulous and all the parallels she lists with
Sandra.
Succession.
That's not.
What's that?
It's not Sandra, it's not.
Oh, okay. Speaking of the Emmys, because she loved Mark Ruffalo's speech, David Sidwell has done all of us a service, everyone in the group, and brilliantly, I might add, even with our logo in an Emmy, he's posted exactly where you can catch all the Emmy award-winning shows. Yes. So if you don't know what streaming service to do it on, he's really taken his time to do that. So,
good man. Yeah,
so that is a really good service for us all. And if we had a sweep, our winner would most definitely have been Samantha Blagg, who picked 11 winners, a record for her, she admitted. So maybe next year we'll have a sweep.
We should have done that. I don't know why we didn't.
Can I quickly jump in and just offer that if people were, you know, oh, but Fox Hill costs money, blah, 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 sure. Binge, 100% worth the cash.
Nailed it.
Like, it has access to all the HBO stuff, all of the things, plus a whole bunch of other stuff that we rail about. Absolutely, Foxtel have moved front and centre the HBO shows that picked up all the Emmys into Binge, so you can find them all there. It's worth it. Plus, sneaky hint, on the TV page, go right down the bottom, a whole bunch of Foxtel linear channels, so you can watch stuff there as well.
Yeah, I've been loving Binge, and I only signed up with Telstra. I got it free with Telstra, but I would be hard-pushed to give it up now. Yep. Okay, Michelle Lucas suggested we start a Real Housewives podcast, which I would so be up for. So many women. I didn't know how many. I thought I always do it like a dirty little, I try and squeeze it in, but I didn't realise how many of you loved it.
I have a Real Housewives podcast.
What?
That's currently in, yes, Nick McLaughlin, who jumped in on that post, and I host the Unreal Housewives podcast, which is essentially an episode-by-episode podcast blow on all of the Australian series of the podcast.
How are we only just learning about this now?
Hang on. Are you a closet Housewives fan? Because when I talk about it, you don't seem to...
I have said that I'm not a fan of everything above the equator, but the stuff that happens down under in New Zealand, I am transfixed by.
Have you tried the South African one?
Oh, God, no.
That's the newest one.
Maybe you guys can talk about this on your...
On the podcast. We will do that.
Real Housewives podcast that you're about to start up. I'm all for it if you talk about it less here.
Okay. All right. Sorry, Dan. Sorry, Steve. Sorry. No, okay, my favourite post of the week, though, goes to Ellen... Is it Hainwright?
Wainwright.
I think I've... No. Oh, well, did you hear Ellen's mea culpa today?
Oh, it was the worst.
I don't know if I was a fan. It was the worst, who asked the group their favourite comfort show. Darren Lachner will always watch The Simpsons.
Yep.
Jamie Pepper is always up for Fawlty Towers. That's a great one.
Great.
Michelle Lucas loves Gilmore Girls. And there must be something in the name Joe, because Joe Stone and I are on the same page, as is the delightful Tiffany Farrington with Sex and the City and Amanda Pritchard. But the loveliest thing I read was the poster, Ellen, who said hers was Winners and Losers and Liv and Maddie. And she mentioned that Winners and Losers, which our very own host, Dan, was a scriptwriter for, correct?
Yes.
She said it got her not only through a really tough year at uni in 2016, but that was, this gives me goosebumps. That was also the year she lost her mum to cancer. Oh. And watching the repeats over and over is what got her through. So
I cried when
really
I read
lovely.
That.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to cry now.
Dan, that was your show.
Yeah. So in the words of Jimmy Kimmel at this year's Emmys, I thought we'd end with the friend that's in your home 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Pandemic or not, is our TV sets.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe. Oh, that's all very lovely. Wow. Okay. That brings us to the end of this week's pod. A huge thanks, as always, to our brilliant binge boxers, Mock, Joe and Brookie. Where can we find you on the socials, Mr. Mock?
Yeah, before we slam this into a river, at Steve Mulk is the best place to find us, friends. And I do need to point out, again, please continue to five-star and give us a great review. It really not only helps, but it buoys our spirits. And last week we asked, and friends,
audience
has answered. Three great additional reviews this week.
So three!
Worst, friends. Dana Gerg offers this. It's her go-to each week. I absolutely love this podcast. It's my go-to. The presenters are brilliant, so entertaining, and they treat each other with such respect, whether they agree with each other or not. Their knowledge of all things TV is astounding. It is the sunshine to my week. P.S. Aww. I love Mark. I may have added that last bit.
Kent
987654 said that it brightens their week. Love listening to this podcast, and I am not a TV tragic. We're still working on them, obviously. don't know how these guys find enough time in the day, but I try lots of the programs they recommend if I can. And some have been amazing. Only some? Thanks, and keep up the good work. P.S. I love Malk. I may have added that last bit. And Ryan Eco offers great chemistry. One of my fave podcasts each week. Great chemistry and banter between the group, and I love the recommendations. Helps in finding something new to watch. Just wish I could participate in the convo. P.S. I love Malk. I may have
We love you too, Malk. Joe, where can we find you on the socials?
I'm at joe.casamento on Instagram and at joecasamento1 on Twitter.
And Brookie.
At Viscount Brookie. I know we're running over time, but I just super briefly have something super serious to say to all of you and all of you listening as well. Please enroll to vote.
we'll be cutting that out because, you know. And I'm at Dan M. Bennett on Twitter and underscore Dan M. Bennett on Instagram. Thanks to everyone for listening. We look forward to your company again next week for more TV Binge Box. Until then, we're out. Bye. We'll